Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, what's up? It's Sandro. I'm here again, the editor of the podcast, also one of the hosts, if you didn't know. Thanks so much for downloading or streaming or just pressing play on the brand new episode of Oldie But a Goodie. It's about to start right now on the movie The Black Hole with special guest Rob Lloyd. Hey, come see the show. Rob, myself, and previous guests of the show, Danny McGinley, Zach Rose, bunch of cool people. We're all putting it on for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival this week. We open tomorrow, Tuesday. We're running until Saturday, 8:30 p.m. at St. Martin's Youth Centre in Melbourne. comedyfestival.com.au, get your tickets. That plug isn't actually why I'm recording this thing, though. The reason I'm recording this thing is to let you know that there's no episode out next week. We are taking a little break, 1 week off in between this episode and next episode. We're taking 1 week off, which of course means that next week we are going to be dropping a Patreon episode for free. But just thought I'd come in front of this episode and let you know that we're going to be taking a break just for next week. But again, there's content, and if you haven't subscribed to our Patreon, you'll be getting an episode that you've never heard before for free straight from the Patreon vault. So that's what's happening. Enjoy the episode on the Black Hole. Come see Shakespeare Ghostbusters if you're in Melbourne. And just be cool, I guess. Enjoy the episode.
Imagine a year where Disney makes a sci-fi that's a retelling of a classic novel, but in space.
Whoa, that narrows it down a lot. What year is that, Sandro?
It could be many years, but this one's 1979, Zach.
Whoa, that wormhole was extra violent today. I was seeing flashes of light, visions of heaven and hell or something. That was so weird. Oh, where am I? I'm on some sort of space station?
Hey, Zach.
Whoa, what the heck is that?
Hey, Zach.
Hi.
Push the power off button on your microphone, Zach.
The power off button?
Push that button, Zach, yes.
Why would I do that? I'm not going to do that. Especially not when you have a voice like that.
Do it.
I'm sorry, strange voice. I can't do that right now.
It's me. I'm Glob the robot. Push the button.
Glob
push
the robot. Button. Oh, Glob the robot. The family-friendly robot that has to be in every sci-fi. Oh, well, I can trust you implicitly, so I guess I'll turn up.
No, don't do that, Zach. We were going to do a podcast. That was me the whole time.
I was just pranking you,
because I saw the robot Vincent in this movie, and I thought all robots just have normal voices now. So,
oh, okay. That was your normal voice?
Yes.
That's the least normal thing I've ever heard in my life.
Anyway, I made a whole bunch of other robots, and one of them's got the personality and voice of Rob Lloyd, so he's going to be here today.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I was just going to say, if we're doing a sci-fi, we need Rob in this. Perfect. Where's Robo-Rob?
Right here, gentlemen. It is a pleasure to be here, and as Sophocles once said, what the fuck is going on?
He did say that. He was like, man, Shit's fucked, yo.
He did, yeah. He did say that. He was the inventor of many things: philosophy, perception of reality, and also rather a potty mouth.
Yeah, that's it.
Fun fact. Don't look it up.
Starting it off with a fun fact, and I'm sure, Rob, you got so many fun facts about the movie, because this week, Zach, we're reviewing a movie that I don't think anyone but Rob likes. It's called The Black Hole. And that was mean of me to say, but genuinely, the reason why I've wanted to watch this for ages is because Rob always talks about it, which is why I picked it, and why Rob's on the show today.
Well, Sandra, I've got news for you.
Because
there might be a second person who likes this film out there. Because this film was great. This film was awesome. I loved it. It was a good time.
Yeah, look, if you could say it with a bit more conviction, Zach, you know, because if you really did like the film, you wouldn't need to hide behind your smug sarcasm.
Oh, guys, I really loved this film. This film was a great time, and I enjoyed myself fully. No, I genuinely really liked this film. I had a great time.
Look, for you, Sandro, I say thank you very much, but also apologies. I'm very much aware that I have an acquired taste, and I have my black tinted glasses that I wear for this incredible experiment with science fiction mainstream disaster motion picture making in the late 70s. Yeah, I adore everything about it, all its successes and all its many failures, and I embrace it. I rewatched it last night in preparation for this. My God, I love this film. I love it so much.
Oh, I had a great time during this film. This is great. I felt like when I watched this, I was watching every single sci-fi piece of media I had seen, but then aged it by like 10 years.
Yeah.
And then that was this movie, and it was great.
Yeah, there's some stuff that's incredibly dated. There's some stuff that's incredibly of the time. And there's some stuff that would never be done nowadays, and it's a shame because how it looks goes beyond that CGI reliance for, I put in inverted commas, believability. So this, that, like, the way it looks is, the matte paintings are beautiful, the effects of creating the black hole and how it looks on screen, the miniature work, all that type of stuff creates these beautiful pictures and images, which, you know, now would just become bland with CGI. But, like, the techniques they use to create the actual images of the black hole is a beautiful artistic representation of it. I love that type of, you know, less reliant on CGI, which just makes all effects kind of look all the same.
Yes, definitely.
Samey, yeah.
I thought this movie was pretty fun. I was expecting, and I think that's just because of the nature of sci-fi movies at the time, I was expecting a Star Wars ripoff. I was like, well, this is Walt Disney trying to do Star Wars, which is kind of funny because they own them now. You know, that's the whole reason I picked it. It's kind of funny. But it's more Star Trek, and, you know, it's kind of similar to Treasure Planet because I don't know if it's intentional or not, but this is just 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, but in space. Like, it pretty much is, beat for beat until the ending, exactly 20,000 Leagues, which was really interesting because I was not expecting that at all. And then, like, half an hour into the movie, I was like, wait a second, hang on.
Yeah, it's also very much a case of, at that time in the 70s before Star Wars came along, and then a little bit after, disaster movies were the big thing, like Irving Allen, who went on to do like Land of the Giants and stuff like that on TV, had, you know, created the Poseidon Adventure, Earthquake, Towering Inferno, and this was sort of like the next inevitable step of sort of like, you know, a disaster movie set in, you know, outer space. But there are definitely those parallels and connections with 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, very much so.
Yeah, there were sort of two points to this movie I had, and one of them was that, like, this film, so it has, like, the 20,000 leagues thing. As soon as I see the mad genius on his own on this vessel, I'm like, ah, yes.
Yeah.
We got 20,000 leagues, but in space. But it's also got, like, the Star Wars computers in the background, and that one guy, one robot that definitely isn't Darth Vader. you know, like, all these things. And that's what I mean, like, how it feels like it's every sci-fi. It feels like an episode of Star Trek, you know? Like a movie of Star Trek, essentially, because those movies are essentially one big episode.
Well, I mean, the motion picture came out the same year as this as well.
Wow, so. There you go. Yeah.
Black Hole came out 2 weeks after Star Trek the motion picture.
Oh, man, no wonder it didn't do very well.
Oh, no. What great timing.
I would say, though, this is a better start. Look, I don't mind the motion picture compared to some, but I think that this might be a better Star Trek movie than the motion picture. Honestly, I think I prefer this one, which...
Wow, there you go. You know.
Yeah, I mean, they're both very po-faced in some ways. Like, it's very much a case of the direction from Gary Nelson is for all the acting to be very down the line. So there's no real big... There's a couple of moments where they sort of, like... push themselves with their emotional range and snap out of this very formal, rigid, focused way of delivering things. Robert Forrester, especially, is very down the line. And the humor, especially between Vincent and the other characters, there's that biting humor that Roddy McDowall, as the voice of Vincent, uncredited, is just wonderful, has that beautiful relish when he delivers these lines. But it's very much like Star Trek the Motion Picture, which was very serious and dour and very bland and gray. There is that element of all the performances are kind of on the same level. Maximilian Snell as Reinhardt kind of chews the scenery a little bit, but doesn't completely devour it.
Well, there's always everyone's favorite Vincent and Bob, right? You know, you've got to have your comedy relief, right?
That's right. And Zach, actually, there's heaps of connections to other movies that we've done. Just those two robots. Bob is played by a guy called Slim Pickens. Pretty good name.
We love Slim Pickens.
He was in Blazing Saddles, so a bit of a recent connection. But yeah, the voice of Winston is Roddy McDowall, who was in Lassie Come Home as the boy. That's the boy from the Lassie film we did.
Oh my God, he's the boy in Lassie Come Home? Oh my God.
That's a pretty direct connection to a film we did.
That's wild.
Yeah, Slim Pickens was also in Dr. Strangelove. He's incredible as Kong, the pilot of the bomber, who has that iconic final shot of him riding the bomb down with his cowboy hats going, yee-haw, over the top. Yeah, and Roddy McDowall's one of my favorite actors of all time in the Planet of the Apes films, and he was a child actor. Grew up with Elizabeth Taylor, and stayed friends for pretty much all their life. And he was, in Fright Night, and he was the voice of the Mad Hatter in the animated Batman series. Roddy McDowall was a treasure.
There you go. You've always said you love Lassie Comes Home. You know, that's one of your all times.
It's definitely up there in my top 500. So
that's top 500. Yeah.
Top 500 Lassie movies.
Go check out my Letterboxd listing of that.
We've also got the connection of Anthony Perkins, who plays Dr. Alex. He was Norman Bates in Psycho, which obviously we have reviewed as well. Ooh. That is Mr. Norman Bates. The guy playing Captain Star. The guy in that borderline, like, Darth Vader C-3PO outfit, he's shooting colored balls from Tron.
Whoa.
That's Tom McLaughlin, who wrote and directed Friday the 13th Part 6, Jason Lives, the comedy one.
What?
The comedy one.
What?
The only good one we've done over the last year.
That's wild. What? The director was in there?
Yep.
That's crazy. Oh my God.
And of course, I've got to mention the director is Gary Nelson, who did direct the original Freaky Friday, which is a bit of a banger, but he also directed Zach Alan Quatermain and The Lost City of Gold.
Whoa!
Hey.
That awfully racist movie we did.
Yeah! Whoa!
But yeah, just a couple connections to previous movies there, but it's pretty good. It's kind of hard to talk about this one without spoilers. Visual effects, Rob, you mentioned that you quite liked all of the matte paintings, but there is a few digital effects here. What did you think of those compared to other movies of the time? Because, like, this surprisingly had a pretty low budget. It was only about $20 million, which, I mean, is kind of on par with what Star Wars ended up costing after all of the budget blowouts, but it's still a bit low budget compared to how much studios were putting into sci-fis after Star Wars.
Well, I particularly, I adore that type of retro technology and how it's, and for me, there's a timelessness to it, and if it's synced up well, it can be, you know, it can endure the test of time because of what it represents, and that the use of CGI at the start, which they then used again for more impressive detail in Tron, the opening sequence is all, you know, the grid and the green lines forming the black hole in the center of the Earth. And kicking that in with John Barry's excellent score, it's a really powerful sort of like simplistic use of, you know, computer-generated images to give you an idea of that otherworldly, futuristic, you know, dated futuristic representation. So it's a banger of a start, especially if you watch it on, Disney Plus. They have the prelude, like they play the fanfare at the start to a black screen.
We have to bring this up because Sandro, did you listen to it?
I did listen to the overture, but I got scared that my Disney Plus wasn't working, so I opened up another show, and I was like, why is there no image on my black hole? So I opened up a different show, and I was this one has image, so Disney's not broken. And then I skipped through the movie a little bit, and I went, oh, they just don't have a... Because usually when there's an overture, there's an image on screen telling you that it's an overture.
I just
thought my TV wasn't working, but it was beautiful music.
Did you listen to it, Zach? I did, because last time I didn't. I think, which one was it? Was it Kong?
You skipped the Kong one, and then I think I bullied you into watching the Great Race one.
Yeah. And so now I'm like, oh, I have to watch the Aperture, otherwise I'm going to get bullied on the podcast. But no, it was fun. It was good. The music in this film was really fun. I liked the music a lot. It's very dramatic.
John Barry, man, was one of the great cinematic composers of all time, and it just bangs. It's imposing and dramatic and uplifting, but daunting and horrifying. It's great.
It is so good. And if you don't know John Barry, he did the first 11 James Bond movies, so he basically came up with the James Bond theme.
Yes, the first 11.
And kind of discovered Shirley Bassey, and they kind of had an affair, but that's sort of like under the... And him working with A-ha on Living Daylights, he just went, nah, I'm too old for this shit. I'm not working for Bond ever again. So A-ha ended the James Bond connection with John Barry. So fuck you, A-ha. I won't take on you in a week or two. Fuck off.
We've got some alternative casting, actually. There's some alternative casting here, which I find pretty funny. Sigourney Weaver was originally potentially going to play Kate, which I find very interesting.
Well, Alien came out, what, in 79? So it's the same year?
That would be funny going from Alien, where, you know, she's a badass, to back to damsel in distress sort of, like, character.
Yeah, Dr. Kate McCrae is an interesting creation. There is definitely moments where she is saved and rescued, and she's quite ethereal, gentle being. I love the whole fact is just dropped in matter of fact. Okay, use your ESP to connect with Vincent. I love it.
Yes.
Of course, there has to be a fucking psychic person for some reason, and of course it's the female, the one female character.
But she pulls out some guns and does some shooting as well. She saves Bob, and she's played by Yvette Minier, who got her first big break in one of my favorite classic sci-fi films, The Time Machine with Rod Taylor. There's definitely an element of sort of like that David Nesko will give all the emotional connection to the female character. But yeah, Kate's got this strength to her and this inquisitive nature, and Yvette plays her very well. And of course, there's Robert Forrester there who sort of like had a resurgence in the late 90s when he was cast in Jackie Brown by Quentin Tarantino, and then Forrester appeared in everything. Like, he was in Ronan, he was in Breaking Bad. I think he did El Camaro, like, just before he passed away, but he's very heroic, very stoic, very... chin is very stiff upper lip, and he's got almost a dimple. I think he's got about 7 dimples in his chin. That's how masculine he is.
It's great. He gave me a little bit of a George Clooney vibe, you know?
Oh, yeah, I see
that.
If he would have, like, just turned on the charm a bit, I feel like he could do that quite easily. But he was very stoic in this film.
The matte... Okay, so I'm going to talk about this because it's really friggin' awesome. The matte paintings, they did over 100 different matte paintings. They got a guy out of retirement who was a matte painting expert. They brought him out of retirement to do all the matte paintings. The model work, it was like huge representations of many different versions of it. I think they did two versions of the Palomino. They had one of the Cygnus. They didn't want to use a black background for this for space. They want because they wanted to give it more color, so they used like blues.
Yeah,
and
I really
they
liked
had
that.
Like the biggest background ever. And to create the pockets of light, they just went around with pins and punched holes in this entire screen and brought light through it to give it all this color. And the black hole effect was actually created. They created this big cylinder with a camera up top. With water inside it, and they'd spin it around with this like wind turbine at the bottom spinning the water, and they just pour colored paint into it, so greens and blues and reds, so that's captured. So when you watch it, that's what I'm saying, it doesn't look like this scientifically accurate or CGI homogenized representation of black holes in space. It's this artistic representation that looks friggin' beautiful and doesn't need to be scientifically accurate. So
yeah, no, really cool. I mean, you know, the guy who did the matte paintings is the same guy who did all of the special effects in Absent Minded Professor, which Rob, you were on our episode for that. So you know, scientifically accurate is not really his.
Well, look at the so many connections.
There you go. Yeah.
Oh, he was the matte artist for the Dick Tracy movie from the 90s. That makes sense.
Hey, they brought him back for Dick Tracy as well.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, no, I loved all that stuff. It was really, yeah, like the last like 20 minutes, oh, that's more spoilers, but it was kind of 2001, but like commercial 2001 Space Odyssey. Like that was kind of what I was getting near the end. And I was like, this is really cool. It's really interesting. And it was great to see that this is a Walt Disney movie, and they do some stuff in this that Walt Disney would never do ever again past the 90s. Like, there's some stuff in this that they wouldn't touch.
I've talked about this many times before. This is my favorite era of Disney. This is the dark era of Disney. This is when they had Ron Miller, who was like a nephew or something of Disney. And he wanted to push the boundaries. So at this point, Disney was not the powerhouse that it was, especially after Walt's death. They started to do cost-cutting things with their animation. So they used the same cells over and over again. They wouldn't clean them well. So stuff like Robin Hood, Return to Oz, Robin Hood, Sword in the Stone, you can see also like these scratches and extra lines and stuff, which I love, but they've kind of gone back over and cleaned them up for their modern releases, which I hate. Anyway, so Ron Miller came in and he just said, well, let's push the boundaries. So they made stuff like Black Hole. They made stuff like Watcher in the Woods, which they promoted as this is not for children. They did Something Wicked This Way Comes, Tron, Night Crossing, all these incredible films that were dark and pushing the boundaries of what storytelling was and what Disney's representation of entertainment was. And of course, Black Hole was a part of that process. And then the Black Cauldron, which was meant to be their big, like, I think it was their 20th film or their, it was such a disaster financially that they just went, we've got to completely start from scratch again. But this pocket of time, about 10, 15 years where nobody was watching Disney. So they just really pushed the boundaries. It's kind of like the Sylvester McCoy era of Doctor Who, where nobody was watching it, but that meant that the creatives could really push the boundaries and do things that weren't confined to this Disney paradigm, which has definitely strangled them for the last 20 years.
And this is also the first Disney movie to ever get a PG rating as well. I think all the ones before this were just rated G, but this one got a couple swear words in there.
Ooh.
Got a couple deaths, so they put a PG on this one.
Oh, that's true.
I was not expecting such just like a horrifying death. I was like, oh, I'm enjoying my fun little sci-fi. Oh, it's getting a little silly. Coming to a head. Oh my God, that guy died. Jesus Christ. He's dead. Fucking hell.
It's great. I love how horrifying it is without a drop of blood spilled.
I'll just bring up my other points that I had before we get into spoilers. I like how it feels like the Star Trek episode, as I mentioned.
Yeah,
we've got our Scotty, we've got our Trelawney. you know, we've
Trelawney.
Yeah. It's like it's a combination of a lot of tropes that I didn't know I knew. You know,
yeah.
In sci-fi, put together with that like bit of a Star Wars-y influence here and there. You know, like it's really interesting. How it feels nostalgic, even though I haven't seen this film before, you know?
Yes.
Well, that's the thing. It's the film I really wanted to watch as a kid, because when I was growing up, everything was on VHS. And so our connection to this wider catalogue of Disney stuff was all through VHS. So they had specific, you know, Disney VHS releases, and they'd have trailers for other films, you know, at the start and the end. Hence the term trailer, because trailer actually means, oh, it trails something. that's where I first saw the trailer for Watcher in the Wood. That's where I first saw the trailer for Black Hole. I'm going, but it was never available. So I didn't watch it till I was like in my 20s when I first saw Black Hole. And because I'd always seen little clips here and I was just tantalized by all these characters and all this nostalgia for something that I never actually saw. So it didn't really hit Australia in any big, massive way back in the late 70s, early 80s. And I was a bit too young anyway to get caught up in that. It's just, yeah, it's just this little pocket of nostalgia that's connected to I always wanted to see it. So when I finally did, I was sort of like trying to, you know, channel 6 or 7 year old Rob. I would love to see how he would have thought of it. As opposed to 21-year-old Rob.
Yeah.
He would have loved Bob.
Yeah, Bob was pretty cool. But yeah. Vincent's the bomb because it was, you know, Roddy McDowell. So
I have a soft spot for Bob.
They actually did a pop vinyl series of only two. You could get Maximilian and Vincent. So I've got the Vincent pop.
Oh, that's great. That's so good.
That's how much I love this film.
Well, the other point I was going to mention is this reminded me a lot of Event Horizon going into it.
Ah,
sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't remember what. Did we do Event Horizon? I'm pretty sure we did.
We have not done Event Horizon, no.
Oh, we haven't? Oh, okay.
We could. That could be fun.
Yeah. Well, it was just like the whole like tone of the film is like, what the fuck's going on, you know, like with this like abandoned ship, you know, in the middle of nowhere, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I love that whole haunted house.
Yeah,
but investigation as well, what happened to the crew and all that type of stuff. I love, and when you get little bits of information of how the crew was before everything went to hell, I love that type of the investigation of what happened there.
Yeah, so I got those heavy vibes from it, and I was down for it. I was like, oh, what's going on? I got, you know, the little goosebumps as they get onto this abandoned ship. I'm like, oh, shit, like, what the fuck's going on? You know, it's good.
Yeah, so some things I would compare it to. For some reason, this gave me Farscape vibes.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know what part of it. Maybe just the outfits, but I was like, this reminds me of Farscape, and I haven't thought about Farscape in, like, 5 years, so... but also, the sets themselves, more on the ship that they come in on, not necessarily Dr. Hans's ship, but looked very Red Dwarf-y on the inside as well. It was very, like, next-gen Red Dwarf, sort of, like, dark yellows and all that, which was quite cool.
There's a lot of colourful buttons, which remind me of definitely season 2 of Red Dwarf, where they, like, season 1 was just all grey, and then they went, we need to add more colour. So they created a new control room, and there was just colourful buttons everywhere.
Yeah.
So with Black Hole, when they're on the wires trying to create that zero-G type feel,
yeah.
And there's just buttons everywhere.
Yeah. Yes.
But one of the cool things, like about what I love a balance of practical and CGI effects. But here, any time they brought up any graphics on the holo projector, that was actually played for real in camera. So they set up like a glass screen, and they projected up on the glass screen all the images so the people, so the actors and the cast could actually see the projection while it's up there.
Whoa, that's pretty cool.
That's really cool.
So it's not added in, it's not added in later. Those projections are actually done in camera.
Mm. Ah, that's really cool.
All right, well, let's rate this thing and then get into some spoilers. Zach, is this an oldie or a goodie from you?
I was going into this thinking probably an oldie, but I was surprised. This is a goodie from me. I had a great time. I had a fun time.
Excellent. Rob, I'm pretty sure I know what your opinion is.
He's been pretty negative on this film. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I've shown my hand pretty soon. pretty early. This is the goodiest of goodies. And this is what you do your podcast for, Sandro and Zach, to bring out these old goodies and bring them the light that they well and truly deserved. Even though light does not actually survive in a black hole, the light shone on black hole will survive for eons.
But with like an anti-gravity device, maybe light could. I don't know. You know?
You don't know. We don't know. There's a mystery. There's a mystery there. What about you, Sandro?
I'm going to give it a goodie as well.
Come on, don't get peer pressured. Give it an oldie. You want to give it an oldie, right? Yeah.
No. I liked this one. I think that there's a couple elements of it that were a little rough to me. Oh, I haven't even mentioned the first, 5 minutes. It felt like every single line of dialogue was ADR'd, and that really threw me off. But I think that's just the Disney Plus remaster, because they always mess with the sound a bit. So
they do.
It just threw me off a little bit at first, though.
They did CGI out the wires as well. I've got the old VHS version of it, and the wires are very clear, which is kind of endearing, but they took them out and cleaned up some of the shots at the start when they're coming up from the lower levels, up from the Palomino up to the top levels. They cleaned those up as well. But yeah, the sound is a bit awkward through the compression of Disney Plus.
Yeah, and they also made Vincent's hair a bit long to cover his butt as well. They had to CGI extend his hair during that one scene.
Release the Vincent butt cut. Release the Vincent butt cut.
The butt cut.
Does anyone even remember when Disney did that to Splash anymore? I don't know if that's a good reference to make for the podcast.
Bring it back, Sandro. That's what you're doing. Bringing life back to all of Disney's machinations.
Hi, real life American Sally McSella here, and here's a fact you might not know about me. I freaking love the MCU. I love Marvel. I do. It's true. Now, you might say, well, then you're a Marvel shill. They ain't good anymore. But here's what I gotta tell you. I might shill for oldie but a goodie, but I don't shill for Marvel. I genuinely love every film that they've ever put out. And that's why I'm keen as heck for Sandro and Zach to talk about Madam Web. Here's a clip.
He has a Spider-Man suit because there's an Amazonian rainforest in Peru, Zach. I don't know if you knew that.
I had no idea. I thought this movie just made that up for this movie.
And there's a bunch of Spider-Men in the rainforest who have magic spider powers, and they all have Spider-Man suits.
Whoa! Except they're made out of, rainforest material.
This has to take place in the MCU.
That's true, and Tom Holland, we never see his intro, right?
We never see his origin story.
We're just kind of pushed into him being...
That's true. But Zach, Spider-Man's suit that Peter Parker makes, it's a very kind of thrown together hoodie, pants sort of thing, but it's very much not a Spider-Man suit. Who makes that Spider-Man suit? Tony Stark makes the Spider-Man
suit. He does.
But apparently he didn't, because he just stole it off the spider people who were already having Spider-Man suits.
I appear to have fucked up a little bit. It turns out that Madam Web's not an MCU movie. It's a Sony movie, and therefore I don't have to shill for it. I mean, therefore, I don't love this one. It's bad, actually. But you know what's good? Sandro and Zach talking about it at patreon.com/oldiebutagoodiepod. You can also get early episodes of the main show without any ads, so you don't have to hear this promo ever again. If you go there, link in the episode description, and get that bonus episode of Madam Web right now.
All right, spoiler warning. The basic premise for this is we've got a ship of... They're kind of like explorers, scientists, maybe, as one might say, a discovery ship in the stars trekking.
Why would you say disgust? Why would you use that word, Sandra? Why would you use disgust?
Why would I mention that show? Check out Rob's Star Trek podcast, where he'll be forced to watch Star Trek Discovery season 5.
I meant to have gone back and watched season 4. I got 2 episodes in and I gave up. So and season 5 starts within the next week or two, so I'm purposely not going to be able to watch any of season 4, so I'm just going into season 5. It literally is, let's get this over and done with.
Wow. Look, I know that we had our disagreements, Rob, on that one Nerd Out episode where we reviewed season 1, but...
I think that's the closest we've ever got to possibly having a punch-up, Sandra. Look, it would be a very flimsy fight if you and I ever got to hand-to-hand combat, but I think it would end at us just rolling around on the ground making out, but Zach would be there filming everything, so...
Oh, absolutely.
That's right, it'll be up on the Patreon. Yeah. I think that is the clue. Even with, like, Last Jedi, we were, like, pretty civil about our disagreements, but not Star Trek Discovery Season 1.
I know, right? We were like diametrically opposed in Last Jedi, but we held our civil tongue and the UN would have been very impressed, but for some reason Discovery just made us go, listen, I'm going to fight you over this and I don't care how many broken bones we have.
But anyway, the black hole, we've got a ship of scientists. They're exploring. It's a pretty small ship, like with Star Trek. It's usually, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 main characters with a ship with like 1,000+ people in it. In this one, I mean, it is a small ship itself, but there does seem to only be 5 people in the ship.
Yeah, it does feel like it's the size of, say, like an aeroplane with about like 5 people on it. Doesn't seem like the Enterprise, which has got thousands of people on it.
Well, it makes more sense for like an explorer type vehicle, right? You know, that's just going out and scouting things, right?
Yeah, like the Palomino is very functionary. It's sort of like a bulky rocket ship.
Yeah.
But once you get to the Cygnus, that is just this impressive, gorgeous, almost cathedral-like structure, especially when the lights come on and it's just like almost stained glass windows all on the outside. But yeah, it's that balance of functionary and, you know, just visually striking designs for the craft.
Everything in this, the designs for everything, even the androids, which, I mean, potentially could be a bit derivative, but also, like, all robots from, like, early sci-fi kind of looked a bit like this. It's just the design for everything was just excellent. Like, this movie looks really, really, really good. So, yeah, that's a massive positive, is just everything looks nice. And that's what you want in a sci-fi. So,
yeah, the production design I find really quite clever and quite beautiful in how it tries to create something that isn't, like I said, it's that sort of like there's a datedness to it, but because it's so... It's not done in just generic sci-fi style. There's a definite design element to it. And it changes from room to room, from the more functionary corridors to the extravagant main deck. And then you get to like the green room, the greenhouse section where all the plants and trees and food are, to the dining room section and to the, you know, all that type of stuff. It definitely has many layers to it.
It's funny because on one half it feels like super into the future sci-fi, like this sort of thing, and on the other half it feels like it's been left behind by, you know, modern sci-fi sort of things, and so it has this weird like flip-flop.
It feels like old school Doctor Who, like in the 60s.
Yeah.
One of the things I like to pull out, like The Wheel in Space is a Doctor Who story with Patrick Troughton's second Doctor. And it's the introduction of Zoe, Wendy Pabry's character. And she's with Jamie, the Highlander. And he's there going, oh, what's all this stuff? He goes, this is the latest in technology. We've got cassette players. We've got tape decks. And they're meant to be in like, they're meant to be in like the 23rd century. I'm going, oh, 60s.
Yeah. But that was back in the day when Doctor Who companions could be Highlanders, could be aliens. I miss those days. Bring it back.
Bring it back.
I say.
They did it with Nardole. They did it with Nardole in Peter Capaldi's final season. Do more than just Nardole. Nardole's beautiful. Give us someone from the Victorian era. Give us someone from the French Revolution. Give us someone from probably not Egyptian era.
Get a Roman or a Greek, you know, philosopher in there.
Yeah. Oh. Well, we already had Rory, so you know, kind of counts.
Yeah.
But yes, they're in a ship and they discover in the middle or just slightly off of a black hole is the USS Cygnus, which is an abandoned vessel that Kate, the telekinetic doctor, scientist person, it's where her dad was. Her dad was on that ship. The ship went missing 20 years ago. It went vanished. It vanished. And so they're like, we gotta check that ship out.
And so it's a rocky road to get in there, but once they get close to it, everything stabilizes. So the ship is on the edge of a black hole, and instead of being sucked in, it's in this orbit around it, and this is in this stable orbit, which is
that immediately like that was where my is this a haunted ship sort of situation? Yeah. In that one, it's like this abandoned ship just staying still in the middle of nowhere. It's kind of spooky. Whereas this, it's like it's not explained. Like, why is it just sitting there menacingly, you know?
That's kind of what, I guess, Alien did as well. There were a lot of, like, haunted house spaceship sort of movies throughout the...
Well, it's a scary place to be trapped in, you know?
That's right. We should bring that back as well. I can't think of a recent movie at all that has done that. That concept. So yeah, I liked a bunch of quotes. Vincent is the droid, the robot for the movie, kind of like the cuteness of like a mixture between Chopper from Star Wars Rebels and I guess like the classic kind of R2-D2 look, but with the voice of C-3PO because it's a sassy robot. This one we got a sassy robot.
Yeah, he's very Chopper in the way that, you know, he doesn't take any crap from anybody. He stands up for himself up against, bigger creatures. Is a bit big noting as well. Like, Chopper very much gives the impression of Chopper knows he's the best. And Vincent and Bob said that all the time. We're the superior design. We're the better ones. But, yeah, all sounding like, you know, Roddy McDowell doing his best Anthony Daniels.
Yes.
With his damn 5 cents philosophy.
I wrote down a couple lines. There was like, out of the fire, hopefully not into the frying pan. Stuff like that, like taking classic lines and kind of twisting them a bit. There was a point, I think it was Lieutenant Charlie was like, Vincent, were you programmed to bug me? And Vincent's like, no, sir, to educate you.
I like that one. That was a good snapback, actually.
That was probably my favorite line in the whole movie. I was like, that's really funny. That was a very, very well written and exactly sets up the fact that Charlie, kind of the one who doesn't play by the rules, and then Vincent, he's looking out for everyone. Smart robot. We should mention all the characters. So we've got Captain Dan, that's Robert Forster. Pretty classic sort of captain, pretty stoic. Always looking out for everyone. Lieutenant Charlie, bit of a, not necessarily a hothead, but definitely pretty eager to get into the action a lot of the time.
Oh, absolutely. Young, hot-blooded.
He feels like a young cowboy, like the moment when he's holding the gun, he like pretends to blow the smoke out of the barrel. So he's very much, you know, young cowboy, like, yeah.
We've got Dr. Alex Durant, Anthony Perkins, who is the doctor who has a bit of an obsession. Dr. Kate, we've already talked about her as well. And then Harry Booth, who's just a guy and he's hanging around.
He's a journalist, isn't he? He's a journalist, and he looks like he's just wearing his flannel pajamas in space.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a pretty popular like character actor. He's in heaps of stuff. Just kind of like it's like a background or side character.
Airwolf.
And he's in the TV show Airwolf. This is true. He's also the original voice of Mermaid Man in SpongeBob SquarePants.
Whoa! Yes, he was.
There you go. He's given her all she's got, Captain. He looks like him, right? They look similar.
Oh, I see it.
Yeah, I guess. They just that was the only thing really that they looked quite similar. It was funny, although he acts quite differently because he's a bit of a coward.
That's right. He gave me Baron Harkonnen vibes from David Lynch's Dune.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. That's a vibe. That's a vibe.
And like, I can see this guy floating around cackling.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They go onto the ship. At first, they're like, this ship's abandoned. But then all the lights turn on, and they're like, that's dramatic. We've got, we're going to check this out. They check out the ship. There's heaps of robots walking around, and they lead them to, that scene where they first walk on the bridge. And it's so, like, not Tim Burton-y, but, like, angular, like lots of sharp angles, really cool like silhouettes of robots doing their work on like weird orb things and just lots of screens. It was so cool. That first moment where we go onto the bridge was just, yeah, visually incredible.
Yeah. It's I like the description that the ship's like a cathedral, because that works very well, because it's big. The big long corridors open up into these massive tubes, you know, with these towering pillars and other things like that. It does actually feel very, you know, cathedral-like.
Mm-hmm.
Very grandiose, as it were.
Definitely, yeah. And we meet Dr. Hans.
Which we already learned earlier is that he has a reputation that precedes him, you know.
That's right.
Bit of a character.
And he is, he's just a classic Captain Nemo, except this guy's obviously awful. I think he's kind of...
No, Sandra, this guy, he's just some genius guy. He's gonna go into a wormhole, it's a great time, you know? Yeah, I see nothing wrong with this guy.
Yeah, he's like, I invented a way to stay here just outside of the black hole. I've got to go in. I've got to explore. It wants me to go in and then explore. No one else has ever done that before. I'm going to be the first to do it. I didn't turn my whole crew into androids. I didn't do that. Not me.
He is very sus the whole time. He's just very suspicious. Like, I'm not going to say he's a bad liar, but he just seems very, like, not there a lot of the time, you know?
There's amazing sort of, like, unhinged delivery to Schnell's work. Like, there's a moment when he's talking about communication, he goes, communication, Charlie. He's just got these weird way of saying things that, you know, elevates it beyond just being that generic villain. But
yeah.
He goes about 60%. He doesn't go the full way for to be a performance that elevates it beyond what it is. He's very much a character within the confines of the successes and failures of the whole film.
It's interesting because they never really touch on it, but he's been in space for the last, like, 20 years, right, with only robot companions, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, they never talk about how he's just, like, not used to talking with humans and all that sort of thing. I like, you know, how he didn't communicate with them. He didn't, like, because they tried to send message to him at the start of the film, and he doesn't, like, send them back. He just turns on the lights, and they come aboard, and it works. So it's interesting.
Yeah, but there's never a moment where you go, oh, no, he's all right. He's just a little bit damaged. You just, every single moment you're going, oh, no, this guy's a bad guy. Oh, no, he's not good at all. And so when it's finally revealed, oh, my God, no, he killed Kate's father and, you know, turned everyone else into android zombie humans, you go, no, that tracks.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, like, at the start, you know, he doesn't fire on their ship. He doesn't do anything too openly aggressive. He does shoot their, like, guns out of their hands, but then they're, like, escorted around, and then it's like they aren't sure, you know. They're like, well, they could have killed us, so I guess they're friendly, right? But it's like they're like going into the lion's den, and it's a bit of like, what is happening? Why hasn't he killed them yet? That sort of thing, you know. Yeah. It's the mystery of it all that's coming together throughout the film, you know.
Yeah, it's also mentioned because he built all of the robots. He built the robot Maximilian, which is the big bad robot. The design looked kind of like Zurg from
Oh my Toy god, Story. Yeah, you're right. He does give off Zurg vibes.
But he's red. It's kind of implied that because he built Maximilian that he's got like an ESP connection to that robot, which is such an interesting idea that like, does that mean that Kate built Vincent? What's going on there? I love this world where if you build a robot, you've got like a telekinetic like connection to them. A very cool idea. But yeah.
Yeah.
Just like having that robot always kind of like floating behind him or doing his work for him was really just foreboding the entire time. I really enjoyed that.
And it was apparently an improvised line that moment after poor old Alex Durant is killed and we say goodbye to Anthony Perkins, that then, like, almost with a tear in his eye, Reinhardt turns to Kate and says, "Save me from Maximilian."
Mm, yeah.
And that's never returned to or readdressed, but it's this case of, hang on, well, is he trapped here with Maximilian, or is this a ploy, or is he just batshit crazy? And I think we all knew he's just batshit crazy.
But maybe it's not his fault. Maybe Maximilian, because of their psychic, maybe Maximilian was a little bit, you know, had an influence on this madman, you know?
Maybe.
It's all left up to interpretation there, though, because it's like, it's never explained, and it's just, we move on.
Exactly. This was made by Walt Disney Productions, and they leave stuff up to interpretation.
What?
Which is, what? We meet the robot of Bob, which is the same model as Vincent, but a bit destroyed. The robot has been beaten up a little bit by Maximilian.
Yeah, he's had a rough time of it. Wasn't it the like used to be second in command, the Darth Vader stormtrooper one that beat him up,
Captain Star?
Yeah,
the Friday the 13th man.
Fucking hell! What a legend.
They have a shoot-off with Captain Star, and Vincent basically makes him, like, kill himself, which was just out of nowhere. Very funny.
It's wild. It's great.
The design of Vincent is pretty cool. You can tell that, like, particularly the eyes, you can tell that the eyes are just kind of, like, glued on. like it's a little bit rough around the edges, but I quite like the design of Vincent. The design of Bob was a little bit, probably the worst that we see in the movie in terms of practical effects and in terms of like how something's designed. I don't know.
What do you mean?
I thought it just looked a bit messy.
Well, that's the idea. He got beaten up, Sandra. Why are you being mean to poor old Bob here? He's had a rough time of it. He's with the crazy scientist guy who killed all the crew. Like, what do you want from him?
The only way I could describe it is it looks like something that you'd find on Facebook Marketplace. It didn't look like a robot.
Wow.
It looked like a prop. I don't know.
The intro we get for him is Maximilian coming in and punching him off the fucking stool.
It makes sense as to why he looks so destroyed. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Stop being mean to my favorite character, Bob. God. How dare you, Sandro.
They find out that the whole crew has been turned into robots. Because Dr. Hans is like, there was a virus going around the ship, so I ordered everyone to leave, but then Kate's father was like, I'm gonna stay, actually. So two people were supposedly left on the ship. Everyone else returned to Earth, but obviously they never did. But no, that was all a lie, and he turned the whole crew into androids.
It's interesting. His lies, they're not, like, obvious, but he's just sus the whole time.
Yeah.
So you know that they're probably not true, but it's like, it's not a guarantee that everything he says is a lie, you know. And he does intend to, like, go into the black hole and all this sort of thing. But it's funny because, like, his plan for deceiving them was sort of like, he doesn't invite them on board. I think he's like kind of making it up as he's going along. He gives me that vibe where he turned on the light. He didn't answer their signals, but he turns on the lights to get them in. And then he's like, all right, I'll send my robots to bring them up to the bridge, that sort of thing. You know, like he's sort of making it up as he's going along. Meanwhile, they're sort of like trying to investigate, figure out what's going on, and they're like moving about in the ship without his permission. So he's like, oh, now you need to be escorted by robots, actually, you know, because he's like, oh, wait, I can't let them do that. You know? So he's definitely not used to people making their own independent thoughts, you know?
Yeah, well, that's kind of the same with 20,000 Leagues to a lesser degree because he has a crew, but he's not used to, like, professional crews, I guess. I don't know.
You know what I mean? He's not used to people not following his orders.
Yeah.
Which comes to his downfall.
The scene where I forget who removes the faceplate of one of the robots, but there is a part where one of the characters is like, all these robots are actually people. I think it's Kate, because Vincent tells Kate telepathically. The face, we see a green deceased human face underneath the robot faceplate. That is the director. That's the director.
Whoa, there you go.
Gary Nelson, who directed the Freaky Friday movie as well.
Wow. He's got a face for directing horror movies.
Hey.
No, but that was a good reveal, because I think, the scientist guy, he pulls off the mask and she sees it and she's like, and then it's kind of like the cat's out of the bag, you know?
Yeah.
Where immediately they're like, oh shit, we got to get off the ship, but it's a bit too late at that point, you know?
Yeah, well, Dr. Hans is like, it's time to liquidate our guests. Just another good line.
I like I like the slow reveal of that stuff. So sort of like one of the androids has a limp and going, why does that happen?
Why should an android have a limp?
Exactly. And the Forrester coming and Forrester's character coming across like the funeral procession for one of their own and fire. That type of stuff's really eerie and really quite poetic. I love that type of stuff. Going, why do androids have funeral services?
Yeah, that's really interesting. That like. He let them have funerals, almost.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't... The madman has some humanity left in him or something, Again, never explained. Just left up to interpretation. But yeah, I think the best character in the film, Bob, he shows... he shows the other robot the... sort of like repair bay or something where the human robots are getting like fixed up, and he's like, this is a death ship, you've got to get out, your friends are in danger, you know?
Yeah, that was a cool moment as well.
I love that part of it, going, you, your friends are in terror, this is a death ship. And like describing the fact of, you know, Kate's father was, you know, was the only one that the crew could trust, and then he was killed by Reinhardt. You're going, oh, you get this whole story of what could have happened and what did happen. It's a nice little exciting moment.
And then I think that's when Harry Booth, he's like, I'm gonna take our ship myself, and he takes off, and then Dr. Hans just shoots him down. So now that they've got no way to escape, no possible way to escape.
Yeah. I liked this because you had the whole lead up where they've like find out that the crew is actually, you know, these robot people, and they're like, we got to get off the ship. And then half of them get on the ship, but the other half is still with the madman. So
yeah.
They have to go over to him and save them. But then... the coward's like, nah, fuck it, out of here, fuck this shit. And then he tries to leave, but of course the ship then gets blown up, so the coward actually saves them from being blown up.
Yeah, exactly.
Inadvertently, which I thought was a good moment. That's great.
We got a bunch of action stuff as well, which was good fun. It was interesting how and I really like the score for the entire movie, aside from maybe this one scene where we've got the main kind of like hopeful theme playing during quite a dark action scene where I think they're trying to save Kate from the machine that makes you a robot or something.
Oh yeah, that they play in the overture. That type of stuff is being played when the laser beams are hitting on her face, and it's and you're going,
it felt a little out of place.
I did want to mention that I like the guns and how they're like these two phaser things, like one on top, one on the bottom,
yeah,
for some reason.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And that everyone just has these like two phaser things that shoot two laser beams.
Yeah, well, they had like a the ones that were shot out of their hand and destroyed at the start of the film is kind of like a regular, you know, laser gun type thing. But then once they get into the Cygnus, they get the double barrel type laser guns, which is very Guardians of the Galaxy.
It was very Guardians. That's true. That's true. I'm sure that James Gunn is probably a fan of this, honestly.
Yeah.
There's a meteor shower as well. That was really cool. The meteors are kind of shown as giant fiery, I mean, that's what they are, giant fiery balls. I love one scene where it lands in, is it the hangar or something?
Yeah.
And it's like rolling towards them as they're trying to cross a bridge. The scale of that was really cool.
Da, 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 da.
I mean, yeah, and also the obvious Indiana Jones connection.
That's incredible, just that it's one of the most iconic images from the film, with sort of like you've got the only bridge that goes across to freedom for them, and you've got the silhouette of, you know, Vincent and Bob flying past and the three of them, and they trip over all at the same time on it as this ball is rolling. It's fiery red, orange is coming closer to the screen, and they just make it across.
Yeah,
I love the size comparison.
Yes.
The thing is fucking huge.
It is.
It's like multi-stories high, this giant thing rolling towards them. It's like, whoa, oh shit, they are in danger.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out.
There's like a travel tube thing that runs along the edge of the ship that is the most we want to make a ride at Disney World part of. Because I feel like every Disney movie from like the 70s onwards has one moment where you're like, that's for a ride, and this is the moment from that movie.
This one does actually make sense, though, that you'd have some sort of transport to move you around the ship.
It does make sense, yes.
It does actually make sense when you have a massive cathedral-sized ship that you would have some sort of like public transport, like thing that sends you around the ship.
But them doing loops and stuff inside of the tube, I don't know about that.
It totally makes sense when you see the layout of the ship, Sandra, all right? You know, the loop-de-loops and the green screen, they all make perfect sense in the context of the ship, all right?
Yep.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What happens after this? Dr. Hans is crushed by a screen, so he's out.
Whoa,
now.
Oh, no!
He's like, Maximilian, help me! But the robot's like, no.
It's funny, because, yeah, he's started up the sort of, like, ship to head towards the black hole,
yes,
which was his whole plan, and just everything is going wrong. And I'm a little sad. I would have liked to have seen what would have happened if everything hadn't gone wrong, you know? Maybe he would have passed into the black hole, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, and the visuals of the ship getting closer to the black hole, everything just, like, slowly turns red. Just everything slowly turns red, which is so cool.
The ship lights on fire at some point, I think. It's just, like, a fiery red ship heading into the black hole. It's crazy.
We get Vincent versus Maximilian in a pretty good fight scene. Vincent's vicious in this scene.
Oh, absolutely brutal. He does pull like an R2-D2 sort of move, though, where it's like the big bad, you know, combat robot gets wrecked by this little droid with a utility belt of tools at its disposal.
Yeah. And Bob is too damaged to go with them, so we say bye to Bob. Very sad. Lots of tears.
I was crying, for sure.
You were, excellent.
Yeah, best character, obviously, you know, so I was very upset by that.
And then they get into a probe ship, and they enter the black hole. Our main three, Alex, Charlie, and Kate, and Vincent, obviously, head into the black hole. And Rob, what's inside this black hole?
Well, you know, as you said so eloquently, it's sort of like $2 shop, 2001 A Space Odyssey. And from the making of the film, you know, they literally didn't have an ending either. The final description on the page was they go through the black hole.
Whoa.
So they were working it out as they were going along. And in the end, they decided to do this whole they travel through the black hole, and what they do is while they're going through that, they literally go through heaven and hell.
Yeah.
So they have to go through hell to get through heaven. So it's like not to the same cerebral heights of 2001, which has you in this void or this tunnel of energy or this, you know, representation of yourself, looking at yourself an older version, then becoming that version, and then being reborn as a god. It's more a case along the lines of there's a lot of fire, and then there's a nice corridor, and an angel flies by.
Yeah.
I loved it. I loved this ending. I wasn't expecting this sort of ending. It's really funny to hear that not only was the villain's plan sort of made up on the fly, but so was the movie. but yeah, the visual of him as well as he's floating in space and possibly time.
Oh, Hans, yeah.
Because we see he's like grown like massive amount of hair, like he's being trapped in time in this black hole, which would make sense because black holes literally manipulate time mm-hmm. because of their gravitational force. I was like, whoa, that's pretty cool. And then he meets Maximilian and then they conjoin as he becomes like, does he get inside it deliberately to like save himself? I don't know. It's
it doesn't seem like it because he's pretty shocked when he's inside. He's like, what am I? Why am I here?
What is happening? Is it their minds merging together? Are they trapped in hell? What's going on?
I don't know, but they got an army of drones. So.
Yeah. I was like, whoa.
And like the visuals there, because the drones in the movie are like, some of them are obviously robots. Some of them are just like people wearing kind of like cult-like hoods and stuff. So the visuals of those like robed robots against this like hellscape was so cool. It looked so good. And then yeah, the angelic corridor with angels, and then the ship flies towards an eclipse or something, and that's the whole movie.
they pop out the other side.
Yeah,
they pop out the other side of a black hole.
And we don't know if they're in a different universe or if they've time traveled or what's going on here. If it's playing by Star Trek Discovery rules, the show, they have entered the end of the franchise and they should stop.
Oh, dear.
I'm not sure what's going on, but yeah, that is the end of the movie. A pretty up to interpretation ending, which was nice to see in a Disney movie. It was good.
Yeah, it's always good to have an ending that you can determine the what the outcome is, or just embrace it as it is.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Are you a grown-up who loves Disney?
Are you a grown-up who wants all the facts?
Are you a grown-up who spends copious hours arguing with friends and family about the deep intellectual properties of your favourite Disney movie?
Do you want to delve deeper into the realms of Disney with us?
I'm Stacey.
And I'm Georgina.
And together, we're Disney Grown-Up. We are the place to get all of the intellectual debate on your favourite Disney movie.
Get all of those fun facts.
And a whole heap of raw reactions to all of those interesting Disney movie moments. You can find us where any good podcast is found or on our website, thatsnotcanonproductions.com.
Join us for Disney Grown Up.
You know you want to.
A That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
All right, well, before we remake this one, or talk about the possible remake that's been in the works for freaking ages, I've got a bunch of taglines for you. Taglines for the movie The Black Hole, and you've got to give them a thumb up or a thumb down.
Nice.
This first one, and these are all really long, by the way, for no reason. The first one...
Oh, fantastic.
The first one is,
There is an inexorable force in the cosmos, a place where time and space converge, a place beyond man's vision, but not beyond his reach.
Yeah, I'll give it a shaky thumbs up.
Okay, yeah. Shaky thumbs up.
I'm intrigued.
Oh, I'm giving it 2 thumbs up, because you know what a tagline needs to be is 2 paragraphs.
Yeah.
All right, well, the second one's a little shorter. Man has reached the most mysterious and awesome corner of the universe, a point where the here and now become forever.
Whoa. Ooh, I'm more intrigued. I'm giving this one a thumbs up.
Okay.
I like this one more.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yep, thumbs up as well for me.
Thumbs up. No. This one, I'm giving this one a shaky thumbs down I even read it. Okay. It is inescapable, swallowing radio waves, light, planets, stars, everything in its path, and man is about to take a giant leap right down its throat.
I think I've seen that OnlyFans account, so.
I was going to say, is this just like a really big space lion or something? Is it like, you know, just...
I don't know. It's so bad. What is this stuff?
I like it.
You like it?
That's a thumbs down for me.
I'll give it a shaky mid for me.
Yeah.
I don't know why they mentioned its throat.
And my favorite tagline, the shortest tagline and the final tagline is, you can't escape the most powerful force in the universe.
Ooh,
pretty good.
That's actually a tagline.
Yeah.
I'll give it a thumbs up.
I've got another one here from the black hole. A journey that begins is where everything ends.
Ooh, I like that one.
That one's good. Wow. Yeah, thumbs up. Yeah.
And I've got one here. Kung Fu Panda 4 in cinemas. Oh, it's an ad.
What?
That's an IMDb pop-up ad.
That's a pop-up.
It's time to remake the movie. Now, this movie was already potentially going to be remade as early as 2009. This has been in the works from the director of Tron Legacy, Joseph Koninsky, I believe is how you say his name. He was attached to the project to direct it, which I think is pretty cool. Tron Legacy, great. Like, they've taken a pretty cheesy, silly Disney sci-fi from the 80s that I love, but is it good? I don't know. They've taken that, and Tron Legacy added everything to it. It was so good. I loved it. So I think that's the exact right direction to go in. What wasn't the right direction to go in was the guy who was writing the script was the person who wrote Prometheus, which is a terrible idea.
Oh,
boo.
No.
Boo. Never give that guy another job again.
Yeah. So that was obviously put on hold, apparently because the script was too dark for a Disney movie, which I'm like, if you're doing an homage to the, like, this era of Disney, why wouldn't it be? But I believe that was probably an excuse, because I'm sure the script was terrible because it was by the guy who wrote Prometheus.
Yeah, I think that's they were trying to be diplomatic, but no, they just went, that guy wrote a shit script and then he wrote another one.
There was another writer attached to it in 2018 called Emily Carmichael, who also not a great track record, wrote Pacific Rim 2 and Jurassic World Dominion.
Oh, no.
But apparently that project was cancelled because it was too similar to Interstellar. So,
And that's a bad thing.
So we've got to come out with our own remake. And Rob, being the veteran fan of the movie of the podcast, how would you remake this?
And remember, Disney's listening, so they'll probably take your ideas for the film that they make.
Yes.
So, you know, just, yeah, keep that in mind.
Firstly, hi, Disney. while I have your attention, could you put onto your streaming services Dr. Sin or the Scarecrow from Rooney Marsh? And also, go back to releasing physical media to Australia, you bastards.
Yeah.
That's a fair call.
Let's do a direct sequel. So we cut back. Kate and Dan and Charlie and Vincent have come out of the black hole and they have gone into the future. They've gone back in time and they have to try and stop They have to try and stop the Cygnus from going. They go back 20 years and they try and stop the Cygnus from going on the trip that they have to do. But then Reinhardt in Maximilian's body has now taken control of the Dante's Inferno hellscape within the black hole.
Yeah.
And they're coming to try and end all life on the planet. So young Kate, the younger versions of themselves and the older versions of themselves have to go up against, and Reinhardt himself has to go up against future version of himself to stop the end of the universe with the black hole, demonic creatures, and future Reinhardt invading known reality and destroying it all.
Oh, I would love him to be a good guy in this movie. Like, he's, like, trying to help them stop himself.
Yes.
Before he, like, he's, like, pre-going insane over his passion project, you know? He's still, like, you know, this egotistical scientist with a big thing, but he's actually, like, not a bad guy.
Mm.
And also, it's a parallel dimension where everyone's fascist. I think that's a great plot line that we should do, you know?
I think that would be very good, and I would like that 8-episode arc.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yes.
Everybody loves an episode arc where everyone's gone fascist now. That's a great thing in a great series, I'd say.
In terms of a director, then, I mean, we could get the Tron Legacy guy, but it's probably a bit of a cop out. Who's a sci-fi director that you can see doing well with this then, Rob?
For me, just because, you know, yeah, he's done sci-fi in a quirky, weird way, visually spectacular way, but can be quite grounded and does really well with characters. And he's got a wonderful visual style, and he could bring that element. Like, he brought it to one of his most recent films. He could bring it to this. Edgar Wright, man.
Ooh,
bring on Edgar Wright.
I like that idea a lot.
Give it to Edgar Wright. All the beautiful visual stuff he did with Last Night in Soho, he could bring that same type of visual representation and danger of space into this.
Oh, Baby Driver was really good.
In terms of a cast, then, the only person who I wrote down while watching the movie was to recast Hans Reinhardt as Jermaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords, because I just thought he has that. He's not as intense as, like, a Matt Berry. Like, Matt Berry would play a really good Captain Nemo, you know, like, he's gone full 10. Whereas I think Jermaine Clement is like Matt Berry, but keeping it at a 6, which is kind of what you described, Rob, in when you were talking about the character. And also, he's got a beard and he looks a little bit like Maximilian Schell, who played the character. So that's my pick for Dr. Hans.
I was thinking possibly Benedict Cumberbatch.
Ooh,
but
yeah,
because that could be, yeah, and Benedict can be a bit arch and over the top with his characters as well, much as I'm loathe to offer Benedict Cumberbatch even more acting work. So, yeah.
yeah, but he would do that good, like, saying nice things but seeming like sus and imposing and scary sort of thing, like, you know, like trying to be polite bad guy sort of thing.
Yeah, I was actually thinking of Cumberbatch's Dr. Alex Durant as the Anthony Perkins recast.
Yeah.
That was actually something I thought of.
I was going Sterling K. Brown for Alex.
Oh yes. Yeah.
I was just thinking for the captain, it was George Clooney, like I said earlier. I was wondering if that
for Robert
would work,
Forster,
you know.
Yeah.
I was wondering if that would work.
I mean, he's a bit on the older side, but also, like, they went through a black hole, so.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
I was thinking Anson Mount from Strange New Worlds. Give him give him Dan Holland.
I like him better. That's good.
Well, let's lock in someone then for Hans and Alex. What do you think, Zach? We got Jermaine Clement, we got Benedict Cumberbatch, or then we got Benedict Cumberbatch or Sterling K. Brown.
Well, it feels like Benedict has to be in here somewhere, by the sounds of it. Like, when you've got him on multiple roles, he's got to be one of them. I think I like him better as the friendly doctor sort of guy. Who's just trying to, you know, figure out what's going on. Because he gave me a bit of Spock vibes, you know, in the original movie, you know. He's a bit more fascinated by the science and stuff. And Benedict gives me a little bit of a Spock vibe.
For sure,
know?
Yeah, for sure.
Which is ironic going by the movies, but anyway.
Yeah, because he's Khan.
Yeah, he's Khan, yeah.
Mm. Oh, I always forget that that movie exists until...
Yeah, I know, right? Randomly I was just thinking about that. I'm like, oh yeah, that movie exists. Yeah. He's already in Star Trek.
Dr. Kate Robb.
I went with she's made quite an impact in the last couple of years, and she's got that great energy of having a sense of calm but an underwriting sense of power and control. Lily Gladstone.
Yeah.
From Killers of the Flower Moon, bring her in to play Dr. Kate. I think she'd have a great chemistry with Anson Mount, and yeah, there's great energy there.
I really like that idea. Yeah.
Yeah, she's cool.
Zach, the biggest question here, and I am going to give it to you. Who voices Vincent?
Who voices Vincent? AKA the second best droid in the movie. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
There's quite a few good robot voice actors out there.
Because a couple of weeks ago, we did do like a voice acted movie.
Yes.
And so we picked some good voice actors like Jack Black. Immediately came to mind because he's been having a good run of that.
He has.
You've
got just thinking of people who've done like Star Wars stuff. You've got David Tennant, obviously.
Oh, David Tennant.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge was not great in Solo, but that she did play a sassy droid. Who was it in Rogue One?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that is K2SO.
Yeah,
that's Alan Tudyk.
Ah, oh, that's also a good one, actually.
He is good.
Well, I'd have Alan Tudyk play Bob.
Yeah. Dan, lock it in.
Yep, perfect.
And then I want David Tennant, but with his original accent.
Do you want a Scottish?
Yeah, I want thick Scottish accent for our droid.
Well, because I was going to say Michael Sheen, so...
Oh,
I was
Michael
also
Sheen.
Thinking
yeah, yeah.
Michael Sheen as well. We could have Michael Sheen as Bob then.
Oh, you have David Tennant and Michael Sheen as the robots.
I think that's funny.
This really gives me a good omen about this movie. I really get good vibes from it. Yeah.
Whoever does the better American accent can do Bob.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
And because it is an oldie but a goodie, and you do have certain traditions when it does come your alternative casting, I thought of the perfect actor to play Harry Booth.
Oh, yep.
Oh.
Danny DeVito.
Yeah!
Danny DeVito. I was actually thinking him for Vincent for a little bit. I'm like, nah, that's silly. I won't bring up Danny DeVito again. We can't do that. But yeah, Danny DeVito.
And as Lieutenant Charlie... Who's a white guy? Who's a blonde white guy? I guess Glenn Powell is kind of the go-to at the moment.
I was going against type, so I was thinking of the kid from Cobra Kai and Blue Beetle, so Sholo Mandirez. He could be quite, you know, the hot-haired young guy with a six-shooter and having a sparring match with Vincent, so... And a little bit younger than Glenn Powell.
Yeah.
I think that's a very good idea. I like all of this, and I think that they should bring this back because it's pretty fun. Even if it's just a direct to Disney Plus, I would definitely watch.
Oh yeah.
Definitely watch this. Rob, thank you so much for coming on the episode.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now we are knee deep in Comedy Festival right now. You just wrapped up as of the release of this episode. If you're listening to this episode on the day it's out and you're wondering what we're doing, Rob and I are currently having a very long day rehearsing for Ghostbusters. You just finished your first Comedy Festival show of the season, but what do you got coming up this week, Rob?
That's right. Just finished off Innes Lloyd's latest show, Mina versus the Martians. And what we're doing this week, opening on Tuesday, the 9th of April, is the return season of the Ghostlight League, my company that does all things pop culture, nerdy, theatre, cinema, live on stage. We are bringing back our show that we did successfully last year. We're bringing Shakespeare Ghostbusters, written by The Coincidence Men, directed by me. Our whole original cast have come back, and we're doing a 5-show run at the Irene Mitchell Studio at St. Martin's Theatre in South Yarra, 8:30, Tuesday through to Saturday, the 9th to the 13th of April for Comedy Festival. Come along and see this blend of the words of the bard and the comedy horror stylings of Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
That's it.
I'll be there Tuesday, that's for sure.
Oh, well then you better get those tickets fast, listeners, because you might be able to see Zach's beard in person.
Yeah. Featuring.
We did not at all time this show with the release of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, by the way, either. I was surprised that that movie is coming out and then we're doing the show. The timing was excellent.
Yeah, well, it was meant to come out last year, but because of the writer's strike and the producers, they pushed it. So they pushed it into being like a couple of weeks before our season of Shakespeare Ghostbusters opened. So thank you, Gil Keenan, Jason Reitman, and everyone at Sony Columbia, Columbia Pictures, for, you know, helping this small independent theatre company in Melbourne do a satellite related show.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're after.
Disney and Sony listen to this all the time, so they're big fans.
Exactly. So, Sony, love what you're doing with Ghostbusters, not so much what you're doing with the Spider-Verse.
What do you mean? Madam Web was a film I saw.
It was so good. I had a great time.
Actually, no, I didn't see most of it because of the heads and hand thing, but anyway.
Well, speaking of Madam Web, if you want to get that bonus episode that we did on Madam Web, because our patrons made us go and watch it, patreon.com/oldiebuttergoodiepod, get that right there. As well as heaps of other bonus episodes, Friday the 13th, we've almost finished all of them, and you can get the one that Captain Star directed. The episode on that is up there right now as well.
Get bonus episodes, and you can inflict more things like Madam Web on us. It would be great.
You can! After our third K-drama, where we're doing 3 more months of Nicolas Cage, in the middle of the year. After that, you can inflict as much trash on us as you want. If you want us to go watch Kraven, we'll do it. See Kraven.
Why would you say that, Sandra?
Links in the episode description. Come see Ghostbusters, links in the episode description. Everything in the episode description. Follow Rob on everything, but this is everywhere. I don't know what I'm saying. Zach, you got to pick next week's movie. Whoa. 1980. Oh my god, we're entering the 80s.
We're in the 80s. We've gone through the wormhole of the 70s and popped out in the 80s.
That's right. Woo-hoo.
The Shining.
The Shining, straight off the bat.
Classic.
Speaking of up to interpretation, that movie is bloody a big mystery.
Yeah. Yep.
The Empire Strikes Back, obviously.
Hey!
Yep. I've heard of that one before.
But we're never going to do a Star Wars movie on the podcast, so you better not pick
that one. Never, not once, unless the Patreon would say so. Friday the 13th.
That was 1980. Well, because Halloween came out a couple of years ago, so that makes sense.
Which is funny.
The Elephant Man.
Great film.
Oh, yeah.
Masterpiece.
Cannibal Holocaust, which is a mockumentary horror movie that...
That does pique my interest.
I don't want to watch it because of animal cruelty reasons, but it does look like an interesting piece of horror.
Yeah, okay, well, maybe not. You got Aeroplane.
Oh, classic.
A classic, yeah.
Popeye. Popeye live action.
Really? Oh, there you go. There's one called Hawk the Slayer, which looks great. I don't know what this one is. The Blues Brothers.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But, Sandro, I have an idea.
Yeah, what's your idea?
Well, we're on the sci-fi train at the moment.
Toot toot, indeed we are.
Yeah. A sci-fi ship, as it were. And, we've done something similar in the past. We tried, and one of us succeeded in watching all of the Flash Gordon old cinematic episodes.
Yeah, the serials.
But I remember we talked about in that the sort of 80s remake Flash Gordon movie.
Oh!
We could do that now.
1980s Flash Gordon? Yes, please. I'd love to watch that movie.
Yeah, that kind of looks great. I'm not going to lie. I have no idea if it's going to be actually good, but it looks amazing.
Have you seen Flash Gordon, Rob?
I have multiple times. I've even got the Flash Gordon 4K release. It's amazing.
Wow, excellent.
Wow, yeah, yeah. So would you recommend? Would you recommend?
Oh, please do. Please do review Flash Gordon.
All right.
I got to interview Sam. I got to interview Sam J. Jones years ago when I had my TV show on Channel 31. I got to review him when we did a segment at, I think it was out for Supernova. So, yeah.
Mm.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome. Well, now we have to do it, Sandra.
Exactly. And, I mean, we did just do Black Hole, which was kind of a semi-retelling of 20,000 Leagues, which we did two 20,000 Leagues last year. So it makes sense as well. Connections. We love segues that we'd then do Flash Gordon, which, of course, we covered last year. So that'd be fun. Next week, Flash Gordon from 1980. Now, Rob, or should I say Robo-Rob, because you are a robot and I created you.
That's true.
Do you have any final words before I deactivate you for now?
Whoa, what?
Well,
I gotta save power.
Just remember, Sandro, I was programmed not to bug you. I was here to educate you.
Excellent.
Although, Sandro, did you create him or I create him? Because remember, this is a coma. Wait, that no, I'm in
you're
right
not in
now,
a coma, so. And comas don't exist. This isn't another season where we're in a dream.
Yeah.
We're not doing that again.
Right.
We did that last year.
No, we are in a dream.
There's only one way to figure out who actually made me. I'm sending an ESP message to one of you right now, and whoever can answer this question will be my creator. Here's the ESP question now.
Three?
Correct. Zach, you are my owner.
Yeah! Oh. Boom! Take that, Sandro.
Wait.
Oh, dear.
Zach has the true power in this realm. I will have to investigate this. But not right now, Zach. We're going into the future. We're doing the next episode straight away. Let's go.
I just guessed, really. I didn't receive any message. I was just throwing it out there, you know? Oh, there's a portal! Ah!